So the title of the talk tonight is Things Are Not What They Seem to Be. So if we just really look at the way we learn from childhood, we learn about life. We use our normal mind to receive information, and then we process this information as thought. And we come to understanding because of this perception of the world and thought. And then we arrive now, in this moment, seeing the world as we see it, based on thought, and assuming it's reality. This is reality. A tree is a tree. If you don't agree that a tree is a tree, you're either an idiot or you're a cat or a dog that thinks it's a place to do pee-pee. And we have a view about ourselves. We know ourselves. I am like this. I have identity. I'm Israeli. I'm English. I'm tall. I'm young. I'm old. I'm this. I'm sick. I'm healthy. I'm happy. I'm not. We have view. We say that's reality. I am like this. And when it gives us problems, this view, such as we down on ourselves, I'm no good, I don't succeed, I'm unhappy, it doesn't work, life, for me, there's issues, there's problems, we believe them as well, reality, because it's coming through thought. And so there's a pain in that. And it goes on and on and on and on and on. Of course, we have reality about the other. So there, the whole world is anti-Semitic, anti-Shemim. It's a sort of a fact that the Jews take as reality. Or Eleha Kacha, they are like this, I'm like this, they're like that, this like that. We have. And that creates often conflict, pain, more pain. We decide someone is a friend, we decide someone else is an enemy. And it goes on, this sense of thought, creating a world which we believe in. Right now, with friends and also with myself, meeting the challenge of Gil Hitbagrut, the growing up, the teenage time. And the reality is, we need the latest iPhone. And someone in the Dharma came to me the other day and said, my daughter wants to commit suicide. Because she said, all my friends have the latest iPhone and I have an old one. Reality is like that. We believe in the whole industry of the internet is based on advertising. And the advertising is about selling us things that we believe will be helpful for us. We believe that the new iPhone is better than something else. So mindfulness is quite a radical way of changing the way we look at reality. We no longer look at reality from the usual way of a perception, a sensation through the eyes and the ears, leading to perception, tfisa, leading to processing, ibud, of information, leading to thought, and leading to the conclusion, this is reality. The whole chain mindfulness doesn't go there. Firstly, mindfulness or awareness that we're practicing here doesn't really have a chain. It's seeing without tivuch, without agency. It's immediate knowing. It cuts through the whole chain of processing the world. We feel a breath coming and going. We don't need a story, we don't need to look at it and think about it, we don't need to say what it is, we don't need to give it definition and labels. It's just, we're just with breathing, knowing. We see a tree, we just feel the moment of us standing next to the tree. It's just a moment. We don't need to process what tree it is, we don't need. And mindfulness is looking closely, it's looking inside, it's penetrating, choder. It penetrates inside things. It's not just a quick look. So a quick look with a normal mind says, I have a hand. Mindfulness says, how is this finger experiencing itself right now? What is the experience of touch? And what is it now? And what is it now? And what is it now? And how is it changing from moment to moment? Where's the hand? Doesn't exist. No conclusion. Instead, life. Change. Inside things, under things. Mindfulness is much more intuitive. It's not conceptual. We don't need concepts about things. We just need deep seeing, paying attention, tumat lev, heart. And as Ella was saying, chbatiyut, care, carefulness. I love the English word respect, because respect is kavod, but in English, it comes from the Latin meaning spec, meaning to see, and re meaning again. So respect means look again. Not just a quick look. Respect means looking again. That's mindfulness. We look again. And with respect, meaning with heart, with care. And it's about mindfulness is looking at places we don't normally see. We're like a king. In this kingdom called the body, most of the time we don't even know what's inside. We don't pay attention to what this body, we just use it. We need to go to the shops, we go to the shops. How many steps are we aware of when we go to the supermarket and come home again? Probably zero. The body's working all the time and doing all the time. We don't know anything about it unless it's sick. And then we just want it to shut up. And we take a pill, Akamol, so we can shut up the body again and not pay attention to it. So it's under the surface. We're looking and seeing what we don't normally see. Sometimes people say, oh, it's so boring. Why do I need to look at breath? It's just, this is not awakening. This is not special. The breath is boring. A step, walking outside, stepping on the grass. So why do I need that? That's not cosmic. That's not ultimate spirituality. That's not surely all the gurus in the world. I have to go to the top of the Himalayas and find my great guru. And he says, no, you're walking. Is that it? But we forget that mindfulness or awareness is expanding the consciousness to places we don't usually stretch it. It's stretching the power of mind, the power of consciousness. Yes, also to the feet. But the power of consciousness is expanding. Instead of being contracted into what I need, what I have to do, to-do list, where I need to be. So it invites tovanot, it invites wisdom, it invites... wisdom is not about conceptual knowing the world. It's much bigger than that. In the tradition, the word mindfulness is sati, and it's usually going with another word called sampajana. And sampajana means knowing the context of something, knowing the ekshere, the context. So, for example, we have a thought. Seeing a thought as a thought is mindful. Just believing I think this is not mindful. Just believing a thought, I think this. There's no mindfulness in that. Mindfulness is seeing that it is a thought saying something. Sampajana would say, what's driving this thought? Where is this thought leading? What's the energy behind this? What's the feeling behind this thought? Why is this thought, what's driving this thought? Sampajana would say, are we in our territory, shetach, territory of awareness? Are we at home in what we are, in ourselves and in what we know, or are we running after things out there? So, Sampajana would say, if we're running after an iPhone, we should know it, because there's a risk in that. There's a story in the suttas about quails, which are choglot, I think in Hebrew. They're very safe if they stay where they are. As soon as they start running around, they get eaten by the nesher, by the hawk. So it's stay where you are. If you start running around after something, you're exposed. So keep with the sense, keep yourself at home. So that's a message of Sampajana. Where are we exposed? Where are we not safe? Where are we vulnerable? What are we doing or what are we thinking that makes us vulnerable? Sampajana would say something, would tell us something about the relativity, the way a strong experience to which we want, for example, happens because of the opposite that was before. So some of us want a very strong experience like zikukei dinur. I'm here, sitting here, and I want powerful realizations. But we forget that a strong realization is maybe because we were strongly not realized before. There's a story, a nice story, a Zen story, a true story actually. A woman came to a Zen teacher and said, it's not happening for me. I've been here 20 years. And all these young people are coming into the Zen monastery and having big enlightenment experiences, satori, powerful, in 1-2 years, they fly. And the Zen teacher said, it's okay, you don't need it. Noise is in relation to silence. The more noise, perhaps the more silence before. Or the more silence, perhaps the more noise before. Everything is relative to something else. What comes now brings the next. What is the next in relation to what was before? Sampajana would say, are we really seeing what is real? Or are we just seeing views of things? What are the filters through which we look at reality? Do we know the filters? How the mind is filtering? This not, this not, this not, this not, no, that, not that, not interesting, that not interesting. What's interesting? The iPhone, the what I need right now. There's a beautiful film, a short film I just discovered by accident some time ago, of an old woman, quite miserable, and she sits in a room, and gradually the room is becoming filled with the cobwebs, with cobwebs, Korekavish. It's gradually, and she's sitting there, she's old, and she's tired, and she's miserable, and the whole, her room, and herself, and her hands are beginning to fill with the cobwebs, and the spider's webs, and the whole room. And then all of a sudden, some little idea came into her mind, and she opened her eyes, and then she went, and she had a spinning wheel. And she started to spin, and she, all the cobwebs became threads, and from the cobwebs she made a beautiful, beautiful tapestry, and her room was full of light, and her heart was shining, and she had on her wall a beautiful tapestry picture made of the cobwebs. And I mean, we have the power to do that. Our patterns, depressing us, they're the raw material. If we understand things, they're the raw material from which we can weave beautiful pictures. Out of our difficulties, our patterns, tavniyot, cobwebs, things that stuck inside us, if we begin to see them as they are, we can begin to make pictures out of our, we can begin to, you know, make compost from the shit. We can. It needs sampajana, awareness, clarity. So there's a beautiful phrase that I like from the sutta that basically says, whatever we conceive it to be, the reality is other than that. It's beautiful. And especially the way I got this message was very interesting, because I was sitting with Ajahn Amaro, who's the head of the monastery in Amaravati, big Buddhist monastery in England. And he's kind of the head of the Theravada Buddhist community in the Western world, to some extent, like Ajahn Sumedho was. But I had a long talk with him one day there in the monastery. And as I left the room, he quoted this in Pali language, and then in English. As I was leaving the room, he said, here's a sentence for you. Quoted it in Pali and then in English, which is, whatever we conceive it to be, the reality is other than that. And it's a really important statement. And all the time we're working with it. For example, if we have a worry or a concern, an agitation, isheket, about something that we're concerned about, or something we are worried about. We believe it to be true. I'm worried about what will happen tomorrow. I am worried about the future. I am worried what I need to do. How do I choose where to go? I'm concerned about something. We see that as reality. Actually, if we look at it carefully, we see it's a contraction in the body. We see it's an emotion of fear. We see that it's a message we give to ourselves. We see that it's based on primal fear, something primal, existential, primal fear, basic, deep, deep fear of us as being born in a body and having to survive in this body. Some really basic stuff coming up. And then it comes up, 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 and then we say, I'm worried about tomorrow. What will be? As a scientist in my past, I was really interested in a kind of science which is a real alternative to the regular science. and it was a science based on Goethe, the German scientist and writer who wrote Faust. But he developed a way of doing science which is so much based on mindfulness. He said, the way to do science, if you want to know and understand a tree, you sit 3 days in front of the tree and do nothing, but just watch this tree, feel its nature, feel what it's saying, feel its dignity, feel its roughness, feel its confidence, feel its, listen to its song. You'll really know this tree, and that's real science, meaning really knowing the world. So we keep seeing what we think of as reality, and when we look more carefully, it's always other than that. And it's all the time. Our assumptions, anachot, about what is reality, all the time we break it. And mindfulness will do that, because we see under the surface of things. It's all just endless examples. What about money? Everybody thinks money is important. Many people spend their whole life doing nothing else other than thinking about money. But money, when you look at it as without this sense of its reality, the important reality, it's just like air. It comes and goes. We don't hang on to it. It comes to us, we pass it on. It's all flowing around between people. It's a form of exchange. It's meaningless. It's pieces of paper we give to each other. It has nothing. It's nothing. And we all the time we need to look at what we believe in as being reality and undo it. And is it really like that? If we watch a film, which can be a story in our mind or it can be a film, a movie, we believe the story, we watch it, wow, look at that, oh, it's exciting, oh, what's going to happen? If we look more carefully, we see each scene is made by a director, that he's composed the actors, and the actors have a line to say, and they are being directed by the director. And when we look at the movie from the point of view of a director, the whole thing is a construction. It's made by people, certain design. It's not reality. So we need to explore things more deeply to break up reality, to break it into pieces, deconstruct so-called reality, which includes us, this reality, deconstructed. And we do this one way by zooming in to what we actually experience. Real zoom in. Go right inside. What is this experience I'm experiencing? With all, as I say, the tools of mindfulness, not the tools of conceptual thinking. And if we break something up into its parts, into its elements, we no longer need to believe it as reality. It's instead an experience made of many, many things. Everything we experience is made of everything else. There isn't one thing that's not made of everything else. It's worth thinking about that sentence. There isn't anything that we know that's not made of other things. So say something very basic that we believe in, like anger. We get angry with somebody. Somebody says something to us, we're angry, we shout back. That's reality. They're mums, they're in. They said this to me. I'm right, they're wrong. Reality, no? Obvious. It's not at all reality. First of all, we forgot that everything is coming through our senses. Everything is their words, there's another person there, there is our body, there is someone else's body. We're seeing all that. then there is perception of threat, of aggression. We need a perception to understand what the other person is saying. When I first came to Israel, I was amazed at, I was totally wrong about perception of anger, because I could be in Tel Aviv and someone was saying, like that. And I would say, what's wrong? What's the problem? He was just showing them that you go left and then you go right to the to get to the falafel place over there. But we notice in this place of anger, we can notice senses, we can notice the body, our body, we can notice perception, that we perceive things in a certain way, and they may be wrong, they may be right. Insult, we receive insult or threat. We feel our button is pressed. We have buttons inside that are pressed, kaftorim. We feel they need to be there to be pressed in order to, for us to be angry. We feel wounded. We feel a self. The self is responding. We are defensive. Tugubatiyut, we are reactive. And then the whole thing is a build-up and a construction of body and hormones and perceptions and senses and reactivity and self and all of that stuff. A big pile of things, and we get angry. And then it's gone. End of anger. And we can break the whole thing up, including what happens when the anger is gone and we feel space. Instead of anger, something else. And we can feel that space. And the whole thing is changed. The reality is not I am angry, but the reality is there is a whole construction happening which I can break up into its elements and be free in the middle of these experiences. So I want to go a bit further with this exploration of mindfulness, if you like. What happens if we really keep going with our mindfulness? What happens if we really go deep into the practice? Where does it take us? This challenge that we challenge reality, we challenge our assumptions, hanachot, we challenge our beliefs, we challenge the known world, we challenge our views. If we keep going, deeper and deeper and deeper, what happens? And here is it where, at least in my view, it gets really interesting. Because firstly, we see that everything that we think is real is made of, like I say, of everything else. And it's always changing, passing and flowing. Nothing stands still. Nothing is in itself stuck. No thought, no feeling, no view, no object, no tree, no person, no Stephen, nothing. Nothing is itself stuck. It's always made of everything else and moving into becoming something else. So we begin to discover that, and there's a big freedom in that. We can't catch, in a way, everything is passing, so we can't really catch it even. A thought that seems to be such a heavy thing, if we really look at it, it's just like clouds passing in the sky. And it's not, and it does nothing. Just like the clouds can't hurt the sky. Ananim lo yichol lazik et ha-shamayim. They just pass by, they do nothing. And we begin to learn that we're instead of a so-called reality that we believe, the world is mystery, is a question, is a paradox. The labels and the descriptions, we need to know this is a bell. That's a description. But it's just a functional description. If we really look at this thing, what the hell is it? So we can say functionally, yes, it's a bell. Fair enough. My dog thinks it's a bowl for dog food. What is this thing? And where is it coming from? And what's it going to? And what's it becoming? And what we, every time we look at it, it's something different. Our descriptions are just convenience. They're just so that we manage to hit the bell or catch a bus. That's enough. We need descriptions of the world just enough for that. They're not really true. They're coming from our mind. Once the Buddha was asked, how do you recognize an enlightened person? How do you know that a person is enlightened? And the Buddha said, you recognize an enlightened person because you can't find them. You recognize an enlightened person because you can't find them. So the person was asking, well, I don't understand, what do you mean? Please explain. And the Buddha said, you can't find them because all the language that you know to describe things, people and the world don't apply anymore. None of the language and the descriptions that we know and we're used to work for a person that is enlightened. So therefore they are beyond description and you can't find them. You can't give them a label, they're unfindable. So as we practice more deeply, the world begins to be unfindable and infinite. And we still drive cars. We still catch trains. It's fine. But that doesn't need so much mind. You just need a description enough to know I have to be at the train station in Naharia at 8 o'clock in the morning to go to Tel Aviv. That's it. Doesn't need so much mind. As we practice deeper, a story, we not only see a story in our mind as just a story that is changing and flowing, we actually begin to sense a bigger space around everything. The mind, the consciousness that can go to the feet and feel them touching the earth, that same consciousness goes everywhere and becomes endless. It's like we have a story of our life. It's like the story projected, a movie projected onto a screen. But as we expand our mindful awareness, our consciousness, we become the screen, which is just a screen. And a story projected on us. It's just a story. But we feel we become the screen. The Buddha, when he was, he expressed it very beautifully, when he was enlightened, the first words that he said after his night of awakening, I'll quote, "For many lives I have wandered, looking for, but not finding, the house builder who calls my suffering. But now you are seen, and you shall build no more. Your rafters are dislodged, and the beam that holds the roof is broken. All craving, needing, hisdokukut,
hisdokukut,
Yeah. Ishtokakut. All craving is ended. My heart is as one with what is not made, not constructed, the unconstructed. And that's a beautiful, a beautiful summary of the whole path. My heart is one with what is not made, not constructed. Means like the screen on which the movie is played, not the movie. There are many ways, going into this just a little bit, what is the unmade, what is the unformed, what is the unconstructed. It's pure spiritual teaching, so take it as you want to take it, okay, as you like it. One way of looking at this will be the sense that our awareness, which is usually tied to objects and thoughts and things in the world, has the possibility of becoming pure awareness. I just want to explain that in one image. If we're looking at something, there is the me looking at the object. There is an observer and an observed. But what is actually happening between me and the object? What's in the space here? What's between us? It's invisible. Nothing there. But there is something there. So what's the awareness that allows that to be seen? It's like the light in the room here. We don't see the light in the room. We only see what is lit up. So we see each other because there's light. Do we see light? It's all over the place. Light is everywhere, but we don't see any of it. We don't see space. So there's an invisible world which is basically consciousness or awareness, which is just itself, which allows us to see things, but it's not the things that we see. A grain of salt, and you know that story of the grain of salt. The grain of salt was asking, how do I know the taste of salt? And the grain of salt was told, you can know it only if you jump into the sea. Then you'll know it. So that's a little bit like that. We need to dissolve, and then we begin to see the space around things. There is a piece of a poem by Wordsworth which expresses this very, very beautifully. Because it's not about consciousness or awareness, it's not something in me. It's something in the universe, it's something in the connection that exists between a person and the world, or awareness. Awareness that connects in and out. And he expresses this beautifully. He said, Wordsworth said, I have felt a presence that disturbs me with the joy of refined thoughts, a sense sublime or subtle of something far more deeply interfused, whose dwelling is the light of setting suns and the round ocean and the living air and the blue sky, and in the mind of man a movement and a spirit that drives all thinking things, all objects of thought, and rolls through all things. So, if we can catch a little bit of this sense of something rolling through all things, that in the mind of man, in our mind and in the world and in the sun and in the trees, and it's something that connects us together. If we can get a sense of that, even a little bit, it brings a huge freedom. Reality is mysterious, is unknown, is empty. We measure things, but they're also immeasurable. At the same time, we measure something, we know something, we describe something, and at the same time, it's totally impossible to describe. It's immeasurable, it's infinite, and the two go together. Form is emptiness, emptiness is form, says the Heart Sutta. It means there's an intimacy between form and emptiness all the time. And the mindfulness, when we really keep going with it, it will show us this. So I was, before I came here, I was learning Kabbalah, because my wife is all the time teaching me. I'm not a good student. She sometimes thinks I'm too Buddhist. But I am interested in the way there's really a deep truth in the Kabbalah. And one thing that there's a big story about is something very beautiful, which is a phrase in the Eov, in the book of Job, which says, Tole Eretz al Blima. And the way I understand, I mean, it's subtle. Blima is klum, is nothing. Well, it's not even a blima. It's blima is what, is not what. Is what is blima? It's certainly the nothing of the nothing. And Tole Eretz, our whole universe, is hanging on nothing. And there's so much mystery in all of that. So we think we know a world, but the whole world that we think we know is hanging on nothing. And we can actually live with it, with that truth. It's not a negative thing. It's a liberating thing. It's like seeing the light in the room instead of just seeing what it lights up. Thank you. So we'll take a moment just to be a couple of minutes of quiet.